the heart of America, the nation's number one liberal voice, where truth and common sense rule. This is the Ed Schultz Show, where America comes to talk. And now, Ed Schultz.
Wrong. Thanks to the NSA, we've gotten in the way of the Ed Schultz broadcast. We've been able to hack in from Hollywood. Now the Fargo to Hollywood evil axis is complete. Ed Schultz is, of course, taking the day off today. I don't know why, but something about a gone fishing sign on his door. Instead, you got me, Brad Friedman of bradblog.com. I am your friendly investigative citizen journalist, blogger, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. We are broadcasting live, as I said, from Hollywood today, from the beautiful studios, and I mean beautiful studios, of KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, the Pacifica radio outlet here, radio powered by the people and powered today by me. Glad to be with you. Glad to talk to you, by the way, on the Ed Schultz radio show. This is my first time sitting in for Ed. Some of you folks may know me, may have heard of me from bradblog.com, of course. I have been the frequent guest host for Mike Malloy for many years. I'm a frequent guest on the Ed Show. Ed Schultz Show was just on last week with Ed. Have been on before as well with my friend Mike Papantonio. I'm also heard on Ring of Fire as a regular guest on Randy's show, on Stephanie's show, on Tom's show, whatever. If you haven't heard of me, you haven't been paying attention. And congratulations on that. I also write, by the way, at places like Salon and Truth Out, National Memo, Mother Jones, The Guardian, The Evil Guardian, of course, where they help the terrorists by releasing NSA leaks and things like that. No, not really. We love The Guardian, and no, we don't think they're helping the terrorists, but I'll get to that in a moment. Glad you could join us. We've got a big show today, a lot of news today, and some great guests coming up. Ari Berman from The Nation is going to be joining us in a bit. What we have here today is some of the best progressive journalists in the country, period. Ari Berman among them from The Nation. We're going to talk about this Supreme Court ruling this week, the one we've had already concerning the Arizona voter registration. The good news on that case, the voter registration case, where they have thrown out Arizona's voter suppression requirement that new voter registrations have to include citizenship documentation, just as the founding fathers wanted, of course. So we're going to talk about that good decision yesterday. And we're going to find out about what could be a very disturbing ruling that that may come in as early as Thursday from the Supreme Court concerning the beloved Voting Rights Act. So we're going to talk to Ari Berman about that. We're also going to be joined a little bit later by Marcy Wheeler, who is monitoring the House Intelligence Committee hearing right now, even as we speak. And, of course, when I say U.S. House Intelligence, I'm not kidding, because that Michelle Bachmann, she's on that committee, so you know it's intelligent. We're going to find out what's going on there. We're going to find out if Marcy and others like you are any more comfortable now that the president has come out and said, oh, there's nothing to worry about. Nobody's listening to your phone calls. These aren't the droids you're looking for. Going to talk to her about that and to you about that if you'd like to get in line this afternoon. 877-934-6833. That's 877-WE-GOT-ED is the phone number. Dial it in and you will get Brad instead. But, you know, not too bad. Also, David Dayan is going to be joining us a little bit later, formerly of Fire Dog Lake, now of New Republic and elsewhere. On this really disturbing article, frankly, that he published there yesterday at New Republic called Unnatural Disaster, How Mortgage Servicers Are Strong-Arming the Victims of the Moore, Oklahoma Tornado and Others. this can't be right. This seems to imply some sort of collusion between insurance brokers and mortgage servicers to hurt citizens. That can't be. I must be misreading that. Also, Desi Doyen, I hope, will be joining us a little bit later for some green news. Some of you folks may know her. She is the co-producer and the managing editor of Bradblog's Green News Report, heard on many fine progressive stations coast to coast and around the globe. She's also seen regularly guest hosting on the Young Turks these days. She's the, well, I want to say the Fox Blonde on the Young Turks, but don't look at me like that, Desi. Yeah, she's just like a Fox Blonde, except she knows what she's talking about, and she doesn't make stuff up. She's going to join us, I hope, a little bit later in the hour. And, you can tweet us throughout the hour. You can tweet me directly at The Brad Blog. That's who I am on the Twitters, The Brad Blog. You can find me also at bradblog.com and on the Facebook at The Brad Blog. And you can always tweet us at WeGotEd. Okay, a couple of points here as I'm sort of introducing myself to those of you who don't know me, who haven't heard me. I also have a show on KPFK, where I'm broadcasting from. It's called The Bradcast. I cover democracy and everything related to it. A lot of people know me for my work on election fraud, on concerns about voting systems, voter suppression, fake voter fraud as put forward by Republicans to try to keep you from voting. I cover money in politics, corporate media reform, secrecy, whistleblowers, the Constitution, the rule of law, the Supreme Court, our absolutely broken Congress, everything that has to do with democracy, because I believe in democracy. To me, that's more important than anything. That's more important than any particular candidate, any particular politician, any a particular political party. I've always said when we get around elections, people say, oh, who are you supporting? This guy, that guy? To me, I'm supporting the voters. It seems to me that the politicians themselves have enough supporters. The people who don't have supporters are we the people, we the voters. That's who I support. So all of these issues that we cover, including the NSA issue, which we're going to talk about today, is about we the people. And it is about self-governance. And it is about knowing what our government is doing. It is about an educated electorate. And it is about doing something when we don't like, when we the people don't like what we see. Doing something, changing the system, fighting back against the death grip, if you will, of obscene corporate control of our media and of our government, fighting back against the anti-government groups like ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. I debunk BS stories. They're usually right-wing BS stories like James O'Keefe and the Acorn scam. I was the guy who outed the fact that he never dressed as a pimp. The whole thing was a scam. He edited the tapes. The whole thing was a lie. The phony IRS, quote-unquote, scandal. I think I was among the first people to say, hey, people, that's fake. Pay no attention to it. It's a hoax. Well, it's not a hoax. There was some bureaucratic bungling at best, but it has nothing to do with the White House. The phony Benghazi scandal. You know, all of these things that are stuff and nonsense, I call them out. I'm also the guy who, you know, outed Chris Christie and his secret keynote speech for the Koch brothers back in 2011. Played those tapes from inside the Koch brothers' secret summit. Released that story, a series of stories on Mother Jones about that. I cover the real scandals, and right now, the revelations of NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden is a very real scandal. It's a very real story. It's leading to a very real and very good national debate, which even President Obama says we need to have. But how do we have that conversation if not for these whistleblowers? So I think the country owes Edward Snowden a great amount of thanks, owes Glenn Greenwald a great amount of thanks, because we are now finally having the discussion that we need to have. And changes are being made because of Edward Snowden's disclosures. The president announced yesterday that he's going to convene a committee, an oversight committee, with some fierce civil liberties champions on it. He's going to ask that more and more documents be unclassified, declassified. We live in a classified state. We live in a surveillance state. There is no reason we should have so many classified documents. I'm going to take a quick break, come back, and talk a little bit more about this secrecy and the dangers that it poses to you and me. And I know about it personally because I have been targeted by these private contractors who have now taken over our national security state. All right, going to take a quick break, come back with much more. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com, in for Ed Schultz. This is the Ed Schultz Show. Stay tuned.
The show for working men and women nationwide. This is the Ed Schultz Show.
Looking for some touch right here on the Ed Schultz Show. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Ed, who is on assignment today. That's what we'll call it. And, yeah, the folks who are tweeting me at the BradBlog, yeah, didn't mean to forget about Nicole Sandler. Yes, I'm on her show. Didn't mean to forget about Scott Ledger on Dangerous Conversations. Yes, I'm on his show. I'm on all of those shows. Right now I'm on Ed Schultz Show, and glad you could join us here. You can, I should also say we're heard coast to coast and around the globe at WeGotEd.com and on the Progressive Voices channel on TuneIn. Glad you can all join us here. Okay, well, we were talking before the break about Edward Snowden and about the important national conversation that is going on thanks to Edward Snowden. And this is something that you will hear repeated from all of the whistleblowers that we know of, frankly, in the world. If you go over to BradBlog.com today, you'll see a link to a conversation, a roundtable, if you will, of NSA whistleblowers, Bush-era NSA whistleblowers, who are all saying, pay attention to Edward Snowden. Edward Snowden, they say, succeeded where we failed. And they also say that what he has disclosed so far is just the tip of the iceberg. I interviewed Dan Ellsberg last week, the legendary whistleblower of the Pentagon Papers. He said the same thing. He said we all owe Edward Snowden a thanks. Now, it's not about him, frankly, being a hero or a villain. It's about what he has disclosed and the changes that have happened because of it. And make no mistake, when you hear people say, and I know a lot of you Democrats out there are concerned. You think that this reflects badly somehow on President Obama. It does not. This is what democracy is about. He hasn't responded saying, there's nothing we can do about it. I'm not going to talk about it. He's responded by saying, yes, we need to have this conversation. We need to make changes. And I realize there is a split down the center of the progressive movement around all of this. And people are attacking Snowden, and they're attacking Glenn Greenwald. No doubt they will soon be attacking me. Some of them already are. But this is about the conversation. This is about a transparent government. This is about governance of the people, by the people, and for the people. And to give you an idea about how far off the rails we have now gone, you need no look no further than over at Talking Points Memo this morning. An amazing story. Now, Josh Marshall over there, he and I have gone back and forth on all of this a little bit. He is not really backing Snowden. At least, let's say he has been dubious of him at best. He thinks that what he did was wrong in disclosing secrets. I asked Dan Ellsberg about that last week during my interview with him, and Dan Ellsberg called Josh Marshall's opinion on this, quote, stupid and misguided. That was fun. But here's an item from Josh today. He writes, here's a sort of bewildering looking glass sort of story that illustrates just how deep the secrecy goes in the entire intel process. As part of the ongoing Snowden story, we are preparing a piece on the intelligence oversight process itself, particularly the mechanics of just how the congressional oversight committees work. Observers and critics have long argued that classified briefings are so circumscribed and controlled, often with members unable to bring their more technically knowledgeable staffers along, that the process of oversight becomes more nominal than real. Josh writes that we spoke to a number of sources for the story, and one was a former general counsel of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. That's the U.S. Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. They're the group responsible for overseeing all of these programs in Congress. And in the process of this reporting, the Intel Committee forbade her, this general counsel, this attorney who's on the committee, forbade her from describing how the classified briefings are even run. Mind you, he writes, not any actual classified material or information, just the procedures of the classified briefings themselves. Stuff like what members are allowed to ask and stuff like that. Even that, she was not allowed to talk about. Even that, she was not allowed to go on record about. Even how the oversight committee works. Just the technical stuff that it does. This is madness. This is insane. This is a secret society gone wild. It doesn't mean everything needs to be public. It doesn't mean that everything should be public, obviously. But we have such an over-classified state at this time that, for evidence of that, just look at all the material that has been declassified by President Obama, by the head of the Department of Homeland Security, the NSA, at this point, in the wake of these disclosures. They've been releasing all kinds of classified information to explain what's going on. Obviously, these things don't need to be secret. How can we oversee our own government if we don't know what it is doing? How can we oversee these decisions by the secret FISA court, which President Obama described yesterday as transparent? Huh? What? Transparent? They don't release their interpretations of the law. Democratic senators Wyden and Udall have been screaming for years about this, saying that the secret interpretations of these laws, of the Patriot Act, the secret interpretations by this secret court are totally different than what most Americans believe the law to be. How is that transparency? And how can we, the people, make decisions about who is governing us and what it is we are doing unless we know what it is that we are doing? So, it's now time for a national conversation, finally, and we're beginning to have it. Now, we'll see how quickly we get distracted and move on to the next shiny object, but for now, I would argue all of this is a great thing. If you disagree, or even if you agree, but I like to hear from people who disagree, give us a call, 877-WE-GOT-ED. That's 877-934-6833. I'd love to hear from you this afternoon. We got a big show coming up in a moment. Ari Berman from The Nation and much more straight ahead. You're listening to The Ed Schultz Show. Brad, in for Ed. Welcome back. This is the Ed Schultz Radio Show. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in today for Ed. Going to go to Ari Berman in a moment, talk about these Supreme Court decisions this week on voter registration and on voting rights. But first, Troy, you got cut number seven there real quickly. I just want to play this cut. Cut number seven.
This is not a program that's off the books, that's been hidden away. This is part of what government puts together and discusses. Statutes are passed. It is overseen by three branches of our government, the legislature, the judiciary, and the executive branch. The process of oversight occurs before, during, and after the processes that we're talking about today.
Okay, so that was this morning. Deputy Attorney General James Cole says, nothing to worry about. There's oversight from all three branches of government. Of course, the executive branch classifies these documents. the federal branch, the FISA court, makes their decisions in secret, and the legislative branch, the Congress, we've got senators like Wyden and Udall, Democrats, both screaming and yelling for years that there is no transparency to these programs and that they are interpreted by the courts differently than they are in the written law. Other than that, lots of transparency. We're going to talk to Marcy Wheeler about those hearings that are going on today a little bit later in this broadcast. And by the way, for those who think that all of this reflects poorly on Barack Obama, let me just mention a poll last week among adults, national adults, 53-37 disapprove of these programs. So the majority of the country is against programs like this, federal government spying, compiling telephone call logs and internet communications. The popular position among the people is against these programs. So I should suggest it hardly would hurt Barack Obama to remind him of that. All right, let me get to Ari Berman. We're going to change the topic for a moment. Oh, if you want to talk about that, give us a call. If you disagree, love to hear from you. 877-WE-GOT-ED, 877-934-6833. All right, Ari Berman is a contributing writer for the Nation magazine and an investigative journalism fellow at the Nation Institute. His first book, Herding Donkeys, The Fight to Rebuild the Democratic Party and Reshape American Politics, was published in 2010. He is now working on a book on the history of voting rights. So who better to talk about the Supreme Court decisions this week, the one we already had, and the even more disturbing one likely to come perhaps as early as Thursday, is my friend Ari Berman. Hey, Ari Berman, welcome, sir, to the Ed Schultz Show.
Hey, Brad, thanks for having me.
Thank you, and thank you for all of your great coverage over the past year. I got to say, having you covering on the voter suppression beat, the Supreme Court beat on these issues, and what was going on in the lead-up to election was just terrific. Your work has been great on this. And to that end, Ari, explain to us what the Supreme Court decided yesterday in a 7-2 decision led by, of all people, Justice Antonin Scalia. What happened, and why is that important?
Sure. Well, the Supreme Court was looking at Arizona's Proposition 200, which was passed in 2004, and one of the provisions said that you have to have proof of citizenship to register to vote. Now, the problem with that is that the 1993 National Voter Registration Act says that you do not need to give, for example, a driver's license in order to register to vote. And what Arizona was saying is that if people use the federal form as provided by the National Voter Registration Act, it has to conform to their state law of proof of citizenship. And the Supreme Court in this 7-2 decision said, no, it doesn't, that the federal form preempts the state form, and that the state law has to be consistent with federal law. And so Arizona can't just throw out federal registration forms because it doesn't conform to their proof of registration, their proof of citizenship for registration.
So that's,
now, it was a fairly technical opinion, but it was basically a law, a decision striking down the proof of citizenship for registration for these federal forms that are used.
So basically, The National Voter Registration Act of 1993 makes it easy for everyone in the country to register to vote on one simple form. They make that available online. They give it away when you go and get a driver's license or when you go to a federal office. And all you got to do is fill it out and send it in, and you should be registered. So Arizona, on top of that, said, we also need documentation to prove that you are a citizen, and if you register to vote and don't include those documents, we are going to throw away that registration form. Is that what they were doing in Arizona when people would submit these national voter registration form in Arizona?
Yeah, that's what they were doing. So over 31,000 people were rejected for voter registration in Arizona as a result of Proposition 200. Less than a third of them subsequently were able to register to vote through other means. And so not only did voter registrations plunge, but voter registration drives plunged as well, because what happens is that the voter registration groups were using these federal forms to try to register voters. It's the easiest form to be able to use. It's hard to, for example, show up at a voter registration drive and say to someone, oh, by the way, do you have your passport on you, for example,
exactly.
When you're registering to vote? Not everyone has that information. So, for example, in Phoenix's Maricopa County, the number of people who are registered by voter registration drives dropped from 24% in 2004 to only 7% in 2005, a year after the enactment of the law. So it did really have a chilling effect on registration in Arizona. I should add that the whole justification for proof of citizenship laws is that there's some sort of fraud going on in voter registration that necessitates more documentation, but there's absolutely no evidence of that. The lower courts, the Ninth Circuit Court, which blocked the law, found that there was no fraud in voter registration, that the federal form worked just fine. And so there was really no reason for Arizona to require this additional documentation.
So they were unable to show any evidence that non-citizens were somehow gaming the system to become registered voters in Arizona, and yet they were willing to go all the way to the Supreme Court to make this case. There have been a number of other states who have also passed similar laws. Will their laws also now be nullified by the Supreme Court decision, Ari Berman?
Not necessarily. There's a distinction between using state forms to register to vote and using federal forms to register to vote. So what Arizona was doing is it was saying you can't use the federal form to register to vote. So if other states, for example, like Alabama, Kansas, and Tennessee were to do that, then that they would be in trouble with the court. Now, if they just say, okay, well, for the federal form, you can keep using it, but we're going to have our own forms, it seems like that would be okay. This is why it's something of a qualified victory before the court, because it's not like the Supreme Court said you can't require additional documentation for voter registration. What they said is you can't not accept the federal forms that are already in existence.
Okay, and now it was Scalia who led this decision, the 7-2 court ruling this week. He had been critical of the case previously. If people had been listening to the hearings, they would have thought that Scalia was going to fall on the other side in this case. He ends up writing the opinion for the majority in this case. Can we take anything away from that, Ari Berman, in regard to the Voting Rights Act ruling, which could be come out as early as Thursday this week? And just to get everyone up to speed here, this is on Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, a provision, the Voting Rights Act of 1965, a provision that requires certain states, certain jurisdictions to get preclearance for new election-related laws because they are jurisdictions with a long history of racial discrimination. And it was Section 5 that stopped, for example, Texas this year and South Carolina this year from instituting their polling place photo ID restriction laws, which would have kept tens of thousands of legal voters from being able to cast a vote. The Supreme Court now may do away with Section 5 and the requirement for that preclearance. Scalia called it, what did he call it, Ari, a racial...
A perpetuation of racial entitlement.
A perpetuation of racial entitlement. He seemed clearly against it. Can we take from this Arizona decision that, well, maybe Scalia will not be against it. Maybe he'll come out on the other side of this case, too, and maybe Section 5 won't go down as many Supreme Court watchers now believe that it will.
No, I don't think we can take that from the decision. I think Scalia made his views on the Voting Rights Act pretty clear, and so I think he will definitely be among at least four of the justices, I would assume, who are going to want to overturn or at least narrow Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. But I do think there have been some strange bedfellows in terms of the decisions of the court recently, not just Scalia writing the 7-2 decision, but you saw another decision, I think yesterday, where Thomas wrote the majority and was joined by the liberals. You saw another case where Scalia was in the majority and was joined by the liberals. Members of the court. And so I don't necessarily think it's a foregone conclusion that we're going to have a 5-4 conservative majority writing the Shelby County Voting Rights Act opinion. Now, that would be, I think, the most obvious prediction based on what we heard in oral arguments.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't really know what's going on here. There could be a lot of horse trading. It seems like the liberals on the court went along with some stuff in the Scalia decision in the voting rights case with regards to Arizona. They might not have gone along with otherwise because they wanted to be in the majority. They wanted to be a 7-2 decision. So it wasn't an unequivocal victory for voting rights, but I think they figured that at least a qualified victory for voting rights would be better than no victory. And it's possible there could be some sort of horse trading going on with the Section 5 opinion to try to convince either Roberts or Kennedy to stop short of overturning what would be such an important provision of a landmark civil rights law.
In the 30 seconds we have left, Ari Berman, do you share my concern if Section 5 is killed by the Supreme Court that this is going to have a radical effects across the country when it comes to election laws and voter suppression? I'm very concerned what happens if they get rid of Section 5 here.
Well, absolutely. I mean, Section 5 has been the most effective thing the federal government has done ever, I would argue, to stop voting discrimination. And so I don't think that anything can easily replace it. I think you get rid of something like that and it'll have a lot of ramifications, not just in the South, in the states where Section 5 is covered, but in other states which will feel emboldened to push voter suppression measures. So I think it would have a really disastrous impact on our democracy.
Not good. Very troubling. Ari Berman, thank you so much again for your work. You can find Ari Berman's work at The Nation, his upcoming book. You got a title for your book yet, Ari?
No, it's still in formative stages.
All right. A voting rights book to come. Check him out at The Nation and on the Twitters at Ari Berman. Thank you, brother, for all you do and for checking in with us today on The Ed Schultz Show.
Thanks, Brad. Good to see you guest hosting.
Thank you, brother. All right. We're going to take a quick break, come back with some of your calls. Apparently, everybody on the phone waiting to talk is named John. I'm not kidding. Maybe they're trying to stay anonymous for NSA purposes. I don't know. So all of those Johns and more straight ahead on the Ed Schultz Radio Show. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com. In for Ed. Stay with us.
Don't miss the all-new Ed Show. Saturdays and Sundays at 5 Eastern on MSNBC.
Welcome back. It's the Ed Schultz Radio Show. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Ed today. Let's get some callers here. 877-WE-GOT-ED, 877-934-6833. Let's go to John. We got all these callers named John. What's up with that? John in Buffalo. Welcome, sir, to the Ed Schultz Show. What's on your mind, brother?
Hey, Brad, I have a lot of respect for you as a journalist. You've done some good work.
But? Is there a but coming?
Well, I disagree with you on this, Edward Snowden guy.
Yeah, why is that?
I think he's got, I don't know if he's got good intentions or not, but I just don't trust the Chinese government. You know, I got to make three pertinent ideas here that China is our number one threat to cybersecurity, espionage, and mm-hmm. currency manipulation.
Yeah.
You know, number two, China is notorious for some of the worst human rights violations when it comes to unfair labor practices.
Right.
You know, I mean, which is not good for U.S. manufacturing. You know, not to mention
let's be clear. We applaud their labor practices because that's where we have everything made. American corporations, American government has not, protested Chinese labor practices.
Having this young man down there in China would make a good point to start to I know the president's been trying to talk to the union about the human rights violations that they've continued to especially with the treaties that they
What does all that have to do with Edward Snowden, John?
Well, because we don't know if this guy is sharing trade secrets. We don't know if he's sharing important information, because China has hacked our servers and stole important information from the U.S. military and Department of Defense. And there's a lot of stuff that this young man, I think this young man is being coerced by the United States. He could be coerced by this military contractor, private contractor.
Well, listen, John, we have no evidence that he is being coerced by anyone. He says he has not had contact with the Chinese government.
Yeah, but
he
how do you know that this private contractor is not doing something to try to, you know, get more information from
the private contractor, Booz Hamilton, you're talking about? Booz
yeah.
Allen Hamilton?
Yeah.
We don't know. We don't know what Booz Allen Hamilton is doing. That is the problem. Our national
right.
security
so,
state. Hang on, John. John, hang on. Our national security state has been taken over by private contractors. But that
yeah,
has nothing to do with Edward. John, hang on. That has nothing to do with Edward Snowden other than Edward Snowden has helped everyone notice that. That seems to me to be a good thing, no?
No, but, you know, I don't think Daniel Ellsberg would have, you know, been that naive to trust the Chinese government.
Well, he's not trusting the Chinese government. He's had no contact with the Chinese government. The fact of the matter is...
He's talked to the newspapers.
He's talked to the newspapers. That's not the Chinese government. Hang on, John. Listen, I spoke with Daniel Ellsberg. You can go to bradblog.com. You can listen to my interview with him last week. He applauds Edward Snowden. He calls him a courageous patriot. He says that there's a reason that he left the country, whereas Ellsberg did not. Among those reasons, he points to Bradley Manning, who has not been able to tell his side for the past 3 years as he's been locked away in the brig. The other point
Bradley
that Dan
Manning
Ellsberg...
Is-
Hang on, hang on. The other point that Dan Ellsberg also made is that when Nixon tried to have him eliminated, quote-unquote eliminated for these leaks, when Nixon stole his psychiatrist's documentation to try to blackmail him, Nixon was doing things that were illegal. All of those things are largely made legal now, and that's a big difference. I'll give you 30 seconds, John. I got to get to a break here.
So you could say with 100% confidence that this young man is not being coerced by the Chinese government?
Absolutely cannot. And that's the point. Don't trust him. Don't trust President Obama. Don't trust Congress. Don't trust anything that you can't see. We have a system built on checks and balances, not built on trust. Check the Constitution. That's what it's about. We are not supposed to have to simply trust anyone. John, I got to get to a break. I thank you for the call, my friend. I really do. All right, we're going to let's take that quick break. We'll come back. We'll see if we can get to another John. You're listening to Brad in for Ed Schultz. Please stay with us.
The Ed Schultz Show will be back after this.
Welcome back to the Ed Schultz Radio Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com in for Ed. This was General Alexander, who's been in charge of the NSA for, about 15 years. This is what he had to say this morning at House oversight hearings, cut number 6.
These programs, together with other intelligence, have protected the U.S. and our allies from terrorist threats across the globe, to include helping prevent the potential terrorist events over 50 times since 9/11.
Well, there you go. That's what he says. That's what Dick Cheney said. That's what George Bush said. That's what Obama says. Could they be telling the truth? More straight ahead on the Ed Schultz Show.